there is every reason to recognize that Paul was lying with regard to the purpose and outcome of the Jerusalem Summit, the most important meeting of his life, the most important meeting in Christendom. Indeed, with regard to every aspect of it, what was discussed, what was concluded, everything that he said is the antithesis of what occurred. Now, I say this because the Jerusalem Summit, also called the Council of Jerusalem, and the Apostolic Conference between Shaul, Paul, and Yosha's disciples, particularly John, Yaukanan, James, Jacob, and Peter, Shimon Kefesh, is also presented in the book of Acts, dominating the 15th chapter. And Luke's account stands in stark contrast to what Paul has written. But Kirk, my friend, there is another reason to call Paul's writings into question beyond the fact that the account given in Acts throughout the 15th chapter is entirely different. What is the other way that we have of knowing that what Paul wrote is untrue?
Well, I mean, we just went through Galatians, and it doesn't match. So he's incorrect. I mean, he changes his tune every time we turn around.
Yeah, so we have lots of ways that we can actually view Galatians apart from the testimony that is provided in Acts.
Mm-hmm.
And one of those is to see if is Paul contradicting himself.
Mm-hmm.
And he does. Okay. Is Paul overtly criticizing and demeaning Yosha's disciples?
Mm-hmm.
He is.
Yes.
Is Paul contradicting Yahweh's testimony? Yes.
Absolutely.
Is Paul advocating the very thing that Yahweh demeans? Absolutely.
Yeah, and go ahead on the question.
I was going to say in the last, is there any historical precedence for what Paul claims to be true? And there isn't.
None.
So there's at least a half a dozen ways, apart from the conflict between the two accounts, one in Acts, one in Galatians, to reject what Paul had to say.
Mm-hmm.
And any one of them would be sufficient by itself.
Sure.
This is like taking a gun and shooting, I'm going to say, a snapping turtle, because I don't like snapping turtles. And taking, a 9mm and at point blank range, shooting a snapping turtle in the head, and then saying, I just really want to make sure it's dead, and shooting it 7 more times. One is sufficient. Any one of these was sufficient to obliterate the snake that is Pauline Christianity.
Right.
And yet we're firing 7 shots into its head.
Okay, let me frame the argument even more.
Please.
I went through Acts last night or yesterday, and I got to about the first 30 words, but that's about all I translated just for you,
okay.
So I can just check on you.
Okay, thank you.
Did I do an
acceptable job?
So far, all those words, that's what they mean. So you're
okay.
Good.
Oh, good. Okay. I do appreciate being checked up on. I'm laughing.
I don't do it to be ugly. I do it to
No, no, no.
Darren, I say, well, we want to be accurate on this stuff, so let's check it from all sources.
I hope you're not misjudging my tone. I actually like it. I think it's great. And, I would be even more pleased if you found out that something I said was invalid, so I'd have the chance of correcting the mistake. So
when I do, believe me, you'll be the first.
Okay. Okay. Fair enough.
I have no reservations about this.
Okay.
Let me frame the argument a little bit.
Please.
You've got in Acts, you have this argument about whether they have to be like Jews. The Gentiles have to be like Jews.
Mm-hmm.
And the question is not whether they have to be like Jews, because Abraham was a Gentile.
Right.
Right. Noah was a Gentile. Adam was a Gentile. So it's not like he doesn't want Gentiles. He started out with a Gentile, because, of course, it's academic, because there was no one named Jews, because that was his grandson's great-grandson, I guess, one of the 12 tribes. So to become a Yehudim, so what separates Abraham from all other Gentiles is that he agreed to the covenant relationship and to the covenant contract.
Right.
Therefore, if you want to be on God's side, that if you want to be different than the average Gentile, then the difference is going to God. You cannot belong to God unless you agree to his covenant thing. So it's the, to me, it's really behind all of this is a moot point. It's not Gentile or Jew. Is do you agree to the terms and conditions of the covenant relationship?
Yeah.
And that's the deal.
Yeah. What was Abraham? In fact, his name was actually Abram.
He was a Babylonian.
Right. He was from Ur of the Chaldeans. You only use his Chaldean synonymously with Babylonian.
Right.
And the Chaldean really incorporates the reality of the Babylonian Mesopotamian reality, which is that there were four cultures there. The first to emerge was what I would call First Babylonia. That was the Babylonia of Nimrod. It's the Babylonia where the vestige of the religion that we see manifest in Christianity, first emerged. And so that's First Babylonia. From there, you get the, three additional city-states, empires. The first is Ur, where Ur was the capital of Suma. And Suma is the place where writing began, where record takings began, where there was a capital city, if you will, and all of the laws that began to structure and stratify. Yeah, so there was a government, a religious standard, a judicial system, sciences developed, numbering systems. They used the 60-base numbering system that we use in telling time. They developed an accounting capability, a recording capability, a commerce capability, but also codified the religion and politics. That was in Ur of Suma, which is where Abraham came. But Ur was incorporated into Second Babylon.
Mm-hmm.
And that was the great empire of Babylon. And there were periods of times where Assyria, which was just north and west of Babylon, took preeminence. And so you would have Assyrian leaders over Babylon. You'd have Babylonian leaders over Assyria. And there were times when the two were one, and there were times where they were distinct. But by using Chaldean, he's speaking of all of that.
Mm-hmm.
So these are by today's racial ethnic definition, these would be Persians.
Right.
They're the people from Mesopotamia that became first Babylon, Suma, second Babylon, Assyria, and then later part of Persia, as we know Persia fighting against Rome and ultimately being destroyed by the first Muslims.
Right.
So there is no question whatsoever that Abram and his wife, Sarah was his half-sister, were Persians. By our today's ethnicity, by yesterday's ethnicity, they were Babylonians. Okay. So your point is that they came from Babylon, they were Babylonians, this myth that that there's a difference between Jews and Gentiles relative to the covenant is nonsense.
No, if you don't agree to the covenant, have you turned to God at all?
Right.
No, not according to God.
That's correct.
So is the whole argument becomes ridiculous if you knew your history.
Correct. Yeah.
What separates us? What separates you and me from everyone else?
As correct.
We agree to the covenant, terms of the covenant.
Correct. Yes. Yeah, that becomes the challenge. Yeah, you're
well,
correct.
I mean, I know he chose those people to tell the story, and thank goodness. But that's a special gift that they had and a special assignment they had, and that's wonderful. wonderful.
Yeah, and he set them off as
that at all, but that's not how they got in. They got in for the same reason you got in and I got in.
Yeah, Abraham and Sarah, the first two participants in the covenant, and their son and their son's sons, Yishak, Isaac, and Jacob, were all 100% Persian.
Now, let's take it even further. There's the house of Judah that dominates the lower tribes below, and the 10 tribes in the north.
They're Persians too.
Think about Manasseh and Ephraim.
Mm-hmm.
They're 50% Egyptian coming out of the chute. He married a Jewish woman.
That's right. Yeah, they're 50% Egyptian coming out of the chute, and they're the other 50% is Persian. By today's standard, Babylonian, by yesterday's standard, or Summa, if you just want to isolate Ur.
Yeah.
That is absolutely correct. Mesopotamian, if you will, the land between the two rivers.
Right.
And so ethnicity means absolutely nothing. And, you know, Paul is saying that ethnicity is everything.
Yeah.
That he has access to the to all of the ethnicities of the world were given to him, and he's separating those from the what he calls the ethnicity of circumcision, which it's his way of demeaning Jews.
Mm-hmm. So, but Yahweh chooses from the two biggest civilizations of the world at the time.
Right. Just say walk away from it.
Yeah.
Walk away from it. Yeah, you've even got Egypt because of the women. You've got some Egyptian in there, and you've got Persian, Babylonian in there. And so it can have nothing to do with ethnicity. And I've said that for a long time. Being Jewish, while it's considered an ethnicity today because it's a subset of the children from Abraham and Sarah, they go right back to the fact that they're Persians.
Yeah.
And that's the reason why there's so little difference between the appearance of a Persian and the appearance of a Jew.
Right. And that's my father, when he went there, he said, you know, gosh, I can't tell the difference.
Yeah. Can't tell the difference. Absolutely true. And so while there is a distinct chosenness,
uh-huh.
A control group, really, that is established with the descendants of Abraham based upon Yahweh's choice, because he wanted to set an example of what happens if you listen to him and what happens if you reject him. And he wanted to make certain that he had a group with whom he could communicate his message. They are the control group, but it has nothing to do with ethnicity. You know, Kirk, I never thought of it that way. But when you put it in contrast with what Paul is saying, you frame the issue.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I really didn't give a hoot about ethnicity.
No.
And while ethnicity matters only in the sense that we apply it to the descendants of Abraham and Sarah, Yishak and Jacob,
right?
That has to do with their extended family, Yahweh's extended family, as a model of the covenant.
Right.
But it has nothing to do with ethnicity, because the ethnicity was already Persian, and, you know, by that time it was Summa, Babylon, Assyria on one side with a little Egyptian thrown in. It was already that. So it's not distinguished from that. So what you could say is that the ethnicity is, doesn't matter where you're coming from. You can walk away from the most corrupt, most religious, most political, most militant, most perverted culture on earth, which at the time was, guess what?
Babylon.
And so you can walk away, so long as you're willing to walk away, which was the first condition of the covenant, so long as you're willing to walk away from that culture, from that country. That's the first thing Yahweh asked him, walk away from your country. So long as you're willing to walk away from it, even today, it does not matter where you come from, so long as you're coming from one of those places,
mm-hmm.
out of it.
Yeah, now that doesn't diminish any of the promises he made to that control group right after 2033,
right.
When he's going to renew the covenant with them.
Right. So it's, but the perspective, you talked about framing the issue.
Right.
With Yahweh, it wasn't about to the ethnicities. It was about from the ethnicities.
Exactly.
It wasn't about to Babylon, it was from Babylon.
Sure.
And so Paul's approach, which is to the ethnicities, to the countries, is the antithesis of Yahweh's.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
It's from them.
Right. Just like he called them out from
Israel. Right, from Egypt. Absolutely. It's from them, not to them. Paul is going to them. Oh, my. Powerful insight. We have yet another nail in this serpent's coffin.
Well, yeah, I kept going through it and I said, well, you know, this is a strange argument because it's,
right.
It's a moot point if you really think about it.
Right. Yeah, Paul's only making two arguments at the Jerusalem Council. One argument is that circumcision is not only unnecessary, it's counterproductive.
Not so.
Yeah, not so, according to Yahweh. The opposite is true. Without circumcision, there is no eternal
no
life,
covenant.
There is no perfection, there is no covenant, there is no relationship, there is no entry into heaven. There's only death without circumcision. So Yahweh says, it ain't so. The second is that the testimony of Yosha's disciples was limited to the message of circumcision and the people of circumcision, and that God had and the disciples had agreed that Paul would have authority to take a message of uncircumcision to the rest of the world. And that's the opposite of what God intended.
Then you never would have had Abraham.
That is correct.
He's uncircumcised when he meets him.
That is correct. Yeah, he went from uncircumcised to circumcised. He went from Babylonian to Bereth, the covenant, from Babel to Bereth.
Mm-hmm.
Absolutely. Yeah, that's powerful. So what Paul is trying to do is to take it from circumcision to uncircumcision, from Yahudah to Babylon.
Oh, yeah, it's easy to see that he's taking you back to Babylon. That's what all religion does. Takes you
yeah.
back to Babylon. That's what Catholics do, the Protestants do, Islam.
And you say you're not smart.
Well, I'm you know, the pig that picks up an acorn once in a while, the blind pig.
Wow. But that, I don't think there's ever been a more apt summary of the difference between the Torah and its covenant and the story of Abraham and Sarah as they engage with Yahweh and accept the terms and conditions of the covenant and therefore receive its benefits, contrasted to what Paul is proposing. They are the exact opposite. Yahweh called two people out of Babylon, away from Babylon, to be part of his family. And circumcision was the final sign that they accepted the terms and conditions of participating in his family. And Paul is dividing the world, taking them from circumcision and as the sign of the covenant to uncircumcision, and he's reaching out to that which is Babylon. He's taking the exact opposite journey. He's leading the world back to Babylon when Yahweh led us away from it. Powerful insight. So in summation, Kirk, what you're proposing, and it's an argument that I don't think can be successfully degraded, is that what Yahweh was proposing is reaching out to the world, communicating his teaching and guidance to the world for the express purpose of drawing us away from our countries, our political and military and religious and societal entanglements, the institutions of man. Drawing us away from those, that we walk away from those things, and so that we walk to him, so that we rely on him, so that we are participants in his process of perfecting us, which is the seven steps along the way through his seven Moed Mikri. Yeah. And so that we pay attention to what he has to say in this regard, observing the terms and conditions of the covenant, and then acknowledge our acceptance through circumcision.
Right.
This is Yahweh's plan. It is the plan itemized in the Torah, described with Abraham, and facilitated through the process that Yahweh used to show us how he removed an entire people, the descendants of Abraham, from, at the time, the most political, military, and religious place on earth, the Mitzrayim, the crucible of Egypt.
Mm-hmm.
And so he began with the one and removed them from Babylon. He then went to the family, the descendants, and removed them from Egypt, which is interesting. That was the blend of the children of Yisrael, correct?
Right.
Yep.
All right, the Manasseh, yeah.
Yeah,
right.
Yeah. So he showed us individually with one family, and then collectively with his chosen people.
Mm-hmm.
This exact process, and that entire process is the entirety of the Torah, leading us away from these things. And what is Paul doing? He's taking
back
those who believe him right back, annulling the circumcision, annulling the Torah, annulling the covenant, annulling the nature of the chosen people and the family, and taking everyone who would listen to him right back to Babylon, which is why the Christian religion is mired in Babylon. Its Trinity is Babylonian. Its Mother of God and Queen of Heaven is Babylonian. Its celebration of Christmas is Babylonian. Its Sunday worship is Babylonian. Its celebration of Easter is Babylonian. Its dying and resurrecting God is Babylonian. Every aspect of it, its cross, is Babylonian.
Mm-hmm.
Every aspect of it, Babylonian.
I think I know now why someone like a preacher and Paul had to straddle the fence. I mean, why not just say, this is my religion, follow me,
mm-hmm.
as opposed to trying to wrap it up in Yahweh's words and then twist them.
Right.
Drag you out. I think I know why that could be.
Why? Yeah, why? Because what you would say is, okay, since Paul is going to create a religion to take people right back into Babylon, to take them away, you know, it's like what Satan did, where he took the Adam and Chawa and got them booted out of the garden. Now, Satan chose to take Yahweh's testimony out of context, to add to what Yahweh had to say, like a New Testament, to add to what Yahweh had to say out of context, to create an impression that was the antithesis of what God said. So that's how Satan got the credibility sufficient for Adam and Chawa to acquiesce to his proposition. So why do you think that Paul took exactly the same approach? Why didn't Paul just propose something entirely new?
Sure. And I think I know, if you think it through, I read one time that man cannot write greater than his own understanding. You couldn't invent Yahusha.
Mm-hmm.
And you say, and it came out of the Yehudim, and they were not heavy into literature. They wrote about the Torah.
Right.
So unlike us, who we write about everything, you know, we just all into literature and Shakespeare and all this stuff.
Yes.
They wrote very much. Most of everything they write pertains to the Torah and those matters.
And what you're saying is that Paul knew, because he studied Judaism,
mm-hmm.
he knew the rabbinic arguments on the Torah, and because he was a Roman, he knew the system that was Rome, and Rome, of course, is an outgrowth of Babylon, then the Persian Median civilization, and then Alexander the Great with a Macedonian Greek civilization, each of them passing on the same politics, the same military schemes, the same religious schemes under different names, but the same schemes, and that Rome embraced it, swallowed it wholesale, and so he knew Babylon through Rome.
But your straw man Jesus that you're now writing about, i.e. Paul,
is Dionysus.
About, you know, is Dionysus, but he can wrap it in Yahusha, which is a character that's far greater than he could have invented.
Correct.
So he steals what he needs from that and rewrites it,
right,
just like the preachers do every day in their sermons.
Right.
And so therefore, that's steal and twist it. You know?
Right. And also, of course, what he wrote about, his whole animosity of the flesh and his enthusiasm for the spirit, That was Gnosticism. He came from Turkey, which at the time was Greece. And so the Greek philosophy and the Greek religion based on Gnosticism is what he knew.
Yes.
And he knew the Roman religion and the Greek religion based upon the dying and resurrecting God, Bacchus and Dionysus. And he knew those things, and he knew the system of Rome, and then he had studied rabbinical literature, and therefore he wove his religion around the things that he knew, creating an amalgamation of Rome, Greece, Babylon, and rabbinic Judaism.
Yeah, so he's not smart enough to make up a God, but he can go down this smorgasbord and pick out the things he wants and remodel him and reshape him into
right.
the God he wants.
So, right, it's just like...
He can sell it. Then he believes he can sell it. And that's pretty much what
right.
Marston did.
Yeah, and but if you look at... We were making comparisons between Muhammad and Paul yesterday.
Right.
Isn't that what Muhammad did? Muhammad wasn't smart enough to create the Quran on his own, so his first... dozen or so surahs, maybe 20 or so surahs, are based almost exclusively on the pagan Hanif religion that emerged in Yemen. And he just simply plagiarized what the Hanifs had stated in Yemen. Same style, same content. And then he wove a little bit of that in his own personal crusade for aggrandizement, just as Paul did. And Paul is basing his initial thoughts on what the same people from the same place had conceived in Babylon. And then he goes from there to Paul is getting the rabbinical point of view because he's buying Talmud quotes from the Jewish rabbis in Yathrib.
Uh-huh.
And Paul, of course, is utilizing the rabbinic arguments. I mean, in fact, all but I, Paul, say it's written exactly like the Talmud, the same approach that the Talmud takes to the Torah. But the rabbis say, you know, and they're arguing. It's just, but I say, and it's, you know, and all these different rabbis are, but I say, but I say, but I say. It's the Paul technique. And so he's blending that. And then he, of course, his ultimate treatise is Romans, where he's speaking on behalf of the Roman Empire and the Roman government, which became the Roman Catholic Church. And so you put it all together, Muhammad, who borrowed from the same sources and plagiarized and twisted because he wasn't smart enough to create his own religion, created an amalgamation of previous religions, just like Paul did.
And if you're a preacher doing this and hearing this, you ought to be scared absolutely to death.
You should. Because what you're saying here is, there is no way to deny that this is accurate.
Yeah.
Other than to just put your hands over your eyes and your fingers and your ears.
And just beg off. You know.
Yeah.
La, 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 la.
All right. Yeah. Exactly.
Children do.
And so what Muhammad did and what Paul did are exactly the same.
And later you find an accident, Shimon just steps up and says, wait a minute.
Yeah.
That ain't so.
And again, they're using what they knew to weave a new religion that serves their personal interests.
Mm-hmm.
Claiming that it comes from the same God who authored the only credible source of information about human existence.
Yeah.
Well, claiming that they're speaking for the same God, while with every word contradicting what that God actually said.
Yeah.
And that's the stunning part of it, is that people have not been smart enough to realize you cannot be authorized to speak on behalf of a God that you demean and contradict.
Isn't that bizarre?
Isn't that bizarre? Now, I'm going to tell you that, well, I agree with everything you said. I think you've only missed one aspect of this.
Oh, I probably missed three.
Well, let me tell you the aspect that I think you missed. I do think that Paul's letters are a mix of the things he knew. Gnosticism, with the spirit and the flesh argument. The rabbinic approach to, but I, Paul, say, on arguments to twist the Torah to serve their agenda. That he spoke and wrote on behalf of the Roman Empire, which became the Roman Catholic Church, because he was a Roman growing up under the influence of Greece in what is today Turkey. That all of that is obvious and undeniable. And so he wrote about what he knew to create his own religion, and then lied when he claimed that he was inspired by and authorized by the very God he was contradicting. But there's more to it than that. And that is that what Paul said was so obviously false. How in the world did it come to fool half of the world's population? And that is where the demon possession, having Satan's messenger, by his own admission, possess him, comes in. Because Satan doesn't want to be known as the adversary. He doesn't want to be worshipped as Satan in opposition to God. Yes. He wants to annul God's identity and to have people worship him through religion as if he were God. And so to do that, you have to weave a lie that accomplishes several things. One is that it replaces Yahweh with Satan. And number two, that it makes Satan appear as if he's God. And number three, that it demeans everything that can be known about Yahweh in the process. Here is how Luke, a historian, itemizes the events or portrays the events related to the Jerusalem Council. The very meeting that Paul was talking about is why you'd have to be ignorant and irrational to view Galatians as anything other than Paul's rebuttal to this meeting. In political terms, it would be spin. You know, when a politician gets caught in a situation that destroys their credibility, they immediately begin spin. Well, Galatians was intended exclusively as spin to confuse people relative to what was stated at the Jerusalem Council, because what was stated there, according to Acts and according to Yahweh, is devastating to Paul's credibility. So this is how Acts begins. This is Acts 15:1. And some, having come down from Yahudah, were teaching the brethren that if you might not be circumcised as prescribed by Moshe, you are not able to be saved. Whoa!
Deadly to his thought.
Whoa! Ouch! You know, it's the some who had come from Yahudah. By the way, what does Yahudah mean?
Judea, as we call it now. It's
But in Hebrew, what is the... You know what Yahudah means in Hebrew?
Yeah, Yah's...
Related to Yah.
Related to Yah, yeah.
Yeah, or... in fact, it's kind of an interesting play on words. Relate is what the Udah means, or Dah means, because Yahu is the short for Yahuwah. So the Dah means to relate. And to relate can have two related, connotations. Okay, one is, I am related to the Sioux Indians.
Mm-hmm.
I am related to my mother and father and to their mothers and fathers. That is who I am related to. I am related to the Irish on one side of my family and to the Sioux on the other. I relate to you. I am not related to you, but I relate to you. We communicate. We relate to one another through communication. And so what Yahudah means is to relate to Yahweh, to listen to what he has to say and to respond to him. That is what it means to relate to someone. And to be related to Yahweh means that you have accepted the terms and conditions of the covenant, and you are in a position where you are related to him in terms of family. So that's what Yahudah means. So from this place, Yahudah is to where these individuals had come. They came from a position of being related to Yahweh and relating to Yahweh. That means they were A, Torah observant, and B, members of the covenant.
Mm-hmm.
All right. And what did they say?
They said there's no way around this.
And were they dictating?
No.
Or was the word, the same word that forms the basis of disciple, were they teaching?
They were teaching. It's described.
Were they instructing or were they commanding?
No, they were instructing.
So what book in Hebrew is named Instruction and Teaching and Guiding?
Torah.
Yeah, that's what Torah is based upon, the Hebrew verb yara, which means source from which teaching, guidance, and instruction flow.
Mm-hmm. Like Jerusalem.
They were teaching. What is the Greek term that translates yara? Yosha called his disciples yara, which means teachers, those who are taught and those who teach. The Greek word is disciple, isn't it?
Mm-hmm. Disciple.
So Yahweh is emphasizing through the chosen disciples that teaching is what is important. So they were teaching. This is really extraordinary. Faith is not based on teaching. You need no teaching to believe.
No.
So, right, religious faith has nothing to do with teaching, but making an informed, rational decision is all about the input of quality information and making the necessary connections. So those who came from a position of being related to Yahweh and relating to Yahweh came teaching.
Mm-hmm.
That if you are not circumcised as prescribed by Moshe, you are not able to be saved.
Slam dunk.
Slam dunk. By the way, that's exactly what the Torah says. If you are not circumcised, you can't be saved. They were teaching the truth. Paul was teaching the opposite. We, in the first words, have a direct bullseye, a torpedo right into the side of Pauline Christianity.
Uh-huh.
They were right. He was wrong.